Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of The War Room, brought to you as part of the Clone Star podcast. I am your host, Mike Overton, and joining me in the co-host seat this week is my wonderful friend from Ireland, Sho. Sho, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, Mike. Thanks for having me out.
Good. Now, our guest this week, we are extremely happy to have someone who gets to spend a lot of time on the bridge, has a pet Tribble, which is neutered, I hope. this week, we are delighted to welcome Lieutenant Christopher himself, Orville Cummings. Orville, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Blessed to be here.
Good. Where's Sho disappeared off to?
I don't know. He went to a wedding.
You've run away already. God. Was it the Tribbles?
I was trying to pull up my notes and I pressed the wrong button on my keyboard and accidentally turned off my camera.
So there you go. Sorry, that's fine. We'll green screen that out. That's fine. So how is the Tribble? How is your pet Tribble?
My pet Tribble is doing fine. It's only one. Because yes, it is neutered, so we don't have an infestation problem. It's nice, given to me by Nilsson, a good friend of mine on the bridge, by the way. Yep. Surely missed her on the bridge. She was a great companion in season 4. Sad to see her go. But as with everyone who's moved on from the bridge, they're on to bigger and better things, working for the Academy, working for the Enterprise, and all these great, glorious things. But I stuck on to the very end.
Good. I'm glad someone did.
I'm exceptionally jealous of you, Orville, that you can just say, yeah, I was on the bridge. That's where I'm stationed. That's where I'm based. God damn it. It's completely unfair. Orville, let's go all the way back in terms of your career. You were born in Jamaica, yes?
That's correct. And
you moved to Canada when you were age 12.
That's correct. I don't know how you know that, but it's correct. I'm kidding. It's public information.
No, Sho has this really good habit of stalking people. No, I'm joking.
I know. Sorry.
Mike, legally, you're not allowed to say that on a podcast.
Damn it.
What brought about the move, Orville? Why did you leave Jamaica to go to Canada?
Well, originally, I didn't want to leave because as a kid in Jamaica, it's an absolute paradise. My parents wanted to leave, mainly my mother, because my dad was already living in Canada. She just wanted a better life for us. And she saw more potential being in Canada than it was in Jamaica, because Jamaica is fun. Now as an adult, I know now what we were kind of like moving away from, because Jamaica is beautiful. It's a paradise to visit. Living there is a whole different story. It's like very hard living there. So we made that move just to like expand our lives and to like reach our full potential. Which I'm very grateful for both my parents for seeing that and like moving me out of that environment. Even though like the trajectory of my life in Jamaica was going pretty decent. I mean, like there's this test that you take in middle school to like for a placement test for your school, and I ended up passing to go into the second top school in all of Jamaica. So like my education would have been like top tier there, but unfortunately, like we couldn't like it was like. One, it was like a 3-hour drive up the mountain to go to the school. It's like Hogwarts. I don't know why it's so far. And secondly, it was very expensive. And at the time, we couldn't really afford it. And we were using most of our money to invest in our visas to come up here. So that's what we decided to choose as our path. And I'm very grateful for it because growing up as a child, I've always been like, you know, fascinated by entertaining and like entertainment and just being like front and I was shy, but I would love to like entertain, do plays and everything, but I never saw it as something that I could do as a profession, and it wasn't represented to me that way in Jamaica. By the way, Jamaica has a very rich art scene, mainly in music, but theater is very much still alive in Jamaica, and we would go watch plays, they record the plays, we get the DVDs and watch it all the time, and it's all comedies and it's freaking hilarious. But I never saw what the road to that was until I moved to Canada and I met more people who were just like, I want to be an actor. I want to do this. I'm like, you could do that? I didn't know you could do that. I thought you had to be selected. I didn't think you chose. I thought it chose you. And I'm like, oh, wow. So that kind of like expanded my mind and I just kept doing it and I never looked back really. I mean, like if you ask me every 5 years in my life leading up to the age of like 18, I wanted to do something different with my life. I wanted to be a therapist. I wanted to be an animal doctor. I wanted to be an archaeologist. I want to be all these things. And then once the world of acting opened up to me, I'm like, whoa, you mean I could be all of these things in one lifetime? I don't have to choose? That's crazy. So like it just kept compounding like the reasons to do the acting. And I love expressing myself, and acting is like one of the ultimate forms of expression, and there's no limit to it. So I kind of just like said, it's a no-brainer. This registered with me more than anything I've ever done in my life. So I'm gonna continue down this path. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be here today, or I wouldn't be on the bridge, and I wouldn't be here talking to you. I'd probably be, I don't know, helping someone with their psychosis as a therapist, or like someone's trouble as a vet. So I'm glad I stuck with that path, and I'm glad that I'm here where I am today.
Orville, I have to ask you the obvious question then. You left Jamaica with its lovely weather, and you went to Canada in its lovely cold. Like, how did you adjust to that?
Well, I'll say one thing first, that the grass is always greener. So in Jamaica, it's lovely, the weather, but when it gets hot in Jamaica, it's ridiculous. I'm talking like you could see the heat waves. You see a mirage of a lady walking down the street that's not actually there. That's how hot it is. And living in that like 365, 24/7, you kind of get like you want the urge for a change. So when I moved to Canada, I'm just like, the first thing I was hyped for is snow. I'm like, I can't wait to see snow. Mind you, I was 12 years old, little kid. Your imagination's so wild. I'm like, snow is going to be the greatest thing ever. And when it first snowed and I stepped outside, I'm like, huh, I don't know why I didn't think snow came with negative degree weather. And it was a very hard thing to adapt to, is the cold, because I personally, to this day, I've lived in Canada for like over 13 years now, I think. And I'm still not used to the cold. Every winter, I'm like, I don't know how I survived last winter. I don't know how I'm going to survive this one. It's absolutely crazy. So I don't like the cold at all. That's why I'm in California, and I'm planning to move here very soon, because it's the best of both worlds. If I want the snow, I can just drive 2 hours north. If I want the beach, I can drive 2 hours south. So I think California is the next big move for me outside of Canada. I've done the cold thing, and I'm over it.
So when you were growing up then, Orville, like, did you kind of, in terms of who were some of your inspirations, like who were some of the actors that you kind of looked up to, and you were kind of there going, oh, wow, I'd love to be able to do what they do, eventually when you started to realize that you could do such a thing?
Yes. Okay, so the answer to this, I'm just going to say, I don't care about the controversy or anything, but Will Smith was a big inspiration for me. I grew up watching The Fresh Prince, and I've always... Exactly. It was like a classic sitcom, and I loved it because it was both funny and both...
wait a second. Whoa, Orville, did you just call it a classic sitcom?
It's a classic sitcom.
Oh, no, he's done it, Mike. He's aged the podcast. He's made us feel old.
Every week, somehow or another, we manage to age ourselves. Whether it's a case of, you remember recording that on VHS? Yeah, remember, yeah, you know, all that, yeah, that's it, you've done it.
So Orville, what you're saying is by the time you were watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, it was already like long over, and it was regarded as a oh dear God.
It was just a reruns at that time I was watching, but I didn't even know as a kid. I thought it was just a fresh show, but that's exactly what it is. But Will Smith was like a big inspiration for me because I loved the way that he could do the comedy thing on the sitcom, and then he made his transfer over into movies and do like dramas and everything. And I thought that once you're in a box, you're in that box forever, and that's kind of like the lane you stay in. But he was able to like cross genres. He does action, he does drama, he does all these other things, and I'm just like, wow, that's really inspiring. And I want my career to be like that, because that's how I want my life to be. I don't want my life to be just one note. I want to have experienced different things, and I'm just like, I want my career, because art imitates life. And I love the variety of this industry, that I could play anything. Because last year I was in space in Star Trek, and then right after that I shot a movie where I'm here on Earth in I don't want to spoil the movie that I'm part of, but like I'm playing a completely different character, and I'm just like, I'm not just the sci-fi guy. I'm also I could play the drama, I could do the comedy, I could do whatever comes my way, and that excites me, because now I'm not stuck in one specific genre. So Will Smith really like showcased that through his career trajectory for me. There's other actors that I've grown to like draw inspiration from is like Mahershala Ali. I love him. I love how grounded he is in all of his performances. And he seems like a wise sage. And I hope to like grow into that maturity in my craft and me as a person. So there's a myriad of different actors that play a vital role in my growth as an actor just by watching them.
And as you've approached different, say, roles and things like that that you've done, when you take on something that you've never done before, and do you get a sense of kind of that it's daunting to you? Do you think it's kind of, I can't do it. And what do you do when you have that doubt in your head? Like, what do you do to persevere and say, do you know what? I can achieve this. I can do it.
I would say 80% of the time, I'm very comfortable with any given role. There are certain roles that I'm given, I'm like, whoa, this is very out of my comfort zone. And normally, instead of like allowing that to defeat me, because in my personal life, I practice like, you know, meditation and just like working through different obstacles, whether it's within or without. So I kind of like bring that into my art. As I said, art imitates life. So all my skills that I develop in my personal life, I transfer them into my professional life as an actor. So when there's a new character that's given to me that I'm not used to playing, that I don't register with on my regular everyday life, I don't judge it, because the moment you create that separation, you create that gap and you can't be connected and become one to even play that role. So I see it as a challenge and I welcome it and I embrace it, and it's scary. And but like every character that I've played that's been different from me, they've been memorable to me, because every single character that exists on screen exists in every single human being. We just haven't been tuned in or tapped into that part of us. We're all a Lieutenant Christopher in our own regards. We're all, a Blade from Blade, in our own regards. So like, we just have to tap into that. There's nothing inside of us that we can't access and bring to the surface. It's just that we kind of set our, like, I play a lot of video games, so we set our like attributes as to what we invest in. You know, I'm the kind of guy that invests in charisma, intelligence, and all that other stuff. But at any point, I'm like, respect the skill. This character needs power. This character needs speed. So that's kind of like what it is for me, like a video game.
Judging by that, you play Fallout then, I'm going to guess.
Oh yeah, Bethesda's one of my favorite like video game studios. I played the majority of their recent games and some of the games that they've developed in the past.
So, question, you mentioned about doing, say, meditation and things like that. Now I'm going to ask a very corporate question. What is your work-life balance like? Do you find it hard to shut off? Or what do you do? If you've had a stressful day, if you've had a really tough day, what do you do to say, do you know what? I need to decompress. I need to relax. I need to center myself. What do you do?
Solitude is very important to me. There's a difference between being alone and being lonely. So I've kind of like separated them in my life. I know that there's people around me that love me, and all the cast, the crew and everything, they're loving people. But sometimes I need to be by myself, and that's when I go into my solitude, to be alone and to be within myself. Because I don't want to give like a huge TED talk about meditation, but my perspective on meditation is not just strictly sitting and closing your eyes. Meditation can come in many different forms, listening to a music that registers with you, taking a shower, going for a walk. So just anything you can do alone that could bring you total peace, you can just focus on being present, is a form of meditation. So it depends on what is accessible to me at the time. As I said, I live in Toronto and this construction city, so it's very hard for me to find a quiet spot and close my eyes. So I have to find different ones. Maybe I take a long shower and I'll meditate and I'll blast the music and I'll start singing whatever song comes on at the top of my lungs. I can't sing, by the way. So my roommates, they are annoyed at me. Like,
that's when the earplugs come out, yeah?
That's when the earplugs come out. You know what's funny, though? Sometimes I'll be singing in the shower and I'm like, yo, I'm killing these notes. And I know my roommates are like in the other room and like in the living room. And I come out and I'm expecting them to be like, yo, you're going crazy in there. I'm like, you guys all left and went to your room? I was killing it in there. I'm giving you a free concert. What are you doing? So that's kind of like how I find my relaxation from all the work and everything I've done. Because being on set is very taxing, because it's a lot of it's long hours. Like it's anywhere from 8 to 14 hours, especially on Star Trek, where it's constantly like a 12-hour day you're looking at. Like on a regular, it would be longer and a shorter turnaround if there weren't certain things in place, like making time for like the prosthetics. So it's you need that time for yourself to like decompress.
And I have to ask the obvious question, Orville, what are some of the songs that you sing very loudly in the shower? I think we need to have a kind of a good basis for what's going on here.
Oh boy. Okay. So it depends. It highly depends on my mood. Sometimes I'm in an R&B mood and I'll put on like songs like from Usher, Daniel Caesar. And then sometimes I'll do throwbacks, like namely last night, recently when I came back from a hike, I'm like, I feel like turning on the shower and turning on some music, and I just put on some Alicia Keys, and I've just been singing. I'm not going to sing it if it sucks, because, you know, we're not sponsored. I don't want you guys to, like, you know, have to clear rights and stuff. But, like, and then sometimes I'll have a completely different genre switch, and I'll put on, like, songs from my teenage years. I'll put on Linkin Park, Evanescence, and I'll sing that to the top of my lungs. 3 Day Grace sometimes, when I feel like there's anger inside of me, and I just want to not, like, be angry, but, like, to express it in a healthy way, which is, like, the healthiest thing place you can express your emotions, in the shower. People love crying in showers. People love laughing in showers. You get the best ideas in showers. And shower is, like, the best place to meditate and just to, like, release your emotions in the most, like, healthiest way possible. So those are just some of the songs.
I absolutely can't disagree with the old shower theory. All right, I do disagree with the whole. I'll throw in some throwbacks, and then you were literally listing artists, and they're going, I grew up listening to those. So yeah, I'm not that old, surely.
Okay, so no.
And Orville, just in terms of, say, when you were, say, studying acting and things like that, like, what were some of the kind of, like, did you study Shakespeare, say, things like that when you were in school, or what was it that you kind of were? What did you learn as you were kind of, say, going through your initial stages of acting? What did you kind of feel would be, say, in terms of, say, your approach? What did you want to do in terms of approaching, say, an acting style and things like that?
So shout out to younger Orville, because he was a very ambitious actor. Because of when I first got into acting, I was like, I want to do it all. But I didn't know what that meant. You know, I only thought it was like theater or film. I want to do both. But I went to Toronto Film School. And that the curriculum kind of like incorporated every little bit of like the different types of acting. Commedia dell'arte, which is like an Italian form of acting. We did mask work. We did the Greek theater. We did theater of the absurd. We did a lot of different genres and form of acting, which I'm very grateful for, because that allowed me to like really hone down and kind of like take a little bit from each, because every skill in this industry is transferable, whether you're a director, writer, or actor. Yeah. So I just took those things and I kind of like picked it apart. And after that, I started taking like independent acting classes around Toronto. I've taken one here in Los Angeles. So I try to like find acting classes to help me like access my emotional side a little bit more, because we're all dudes here, so we're taught like, you know, being too emotional is for like girls and whatever, and that's not true, which is what kind of like acting opened up to me, and meditation, is that it's like there's a fine balance between the feminine and masculine side, and because you're masculine, that's your dominant side, but there is a feminine side, and we need to like honor that and take time to like access that. And through my career and my education as an actor, it allowed me to like tap into that a little bit more and be more sympathetic, sensitive, and have more access and have more opinions, because the most important person in the scene is the other person in front of you, because it's not like you're trying to affect that person, but also allow that person to affect you. So it's a very like, I tell people all the time, just take an acting class. You don't have to be an actor, but it'll just make you a better human being, because it removes all the layers that we built up on, all the masks that we put on in our everyday life just to get by. But like, I don't think it's healthy to live a life where you're just getting by. It's an experience. Everything is an experience. And doing acting allows you to have a different perspective on what you're experiencing. So I kind of go about acting in my education in what can help me deepen my experiences, deepen the experiences I'm having on and off screen. Because again, art imitates life, and I want these things to be a symbiotic, have a symbiotic relationship.
And in terms of then, say, which one did you want to focus on? Did you want to, I know obviously you want to try everything, Orville, which is absolutely kind of credit to you. Would you prefer to have been on the stage, or would you prefer to have been on the screen? Obviously, I think you've done both. But which one do you enjoy more?
Oh man, I've done more film than theater. I have respect for both of them for different reasons. For the long term, I would say film is my main like focus. Yeah, and I'll do a theater play once in a while, but like the film is my main focus.
And like, how do you feel about saying when you're on stage, when you're kind of in front of a crowd and things like that? Do you find that more daunting than, say, when you're walking onto a set and getting ready for the director to shout action?
Every time I'm on stage, for the times I've done it, I am pooping my pants. Like, it's absolutely crazy. Let me tell you something. I haven't done very much plays. I've done a handful of plays that I can like, but like every play I've done, I've had a moment where I'm just like, I froze. I'm like, what? What's going? Because it's just live on camera. If you freeze, forget a line or make a flub or whatever, you'll be like, yeah, just pick it up and go back. The editors will make you look good. And I'm like, oh, but on stage, it's all you. And it's just like, you have to feed off the energy of the crowd. You have to like literally be on 100% of the time. Whereas film, you're like, you're on, then you're off. You're on, then you're off. Whereas theater, you have to, it's a marathon, not a sprint. So it's, I remember the first play I ever did was a high school play. And we rehearsed this play for like 2.5 months maybe before we, and I was in one of the lead roles, which I'm very grateful for. And I remember that matinee, which was like the opening, like kind of like middle of the school day kind of like plays for like anyone who wants to get out of class early and need a good reason. And they come and watch this play. And I remember the curtains open up and it's supposed to be me and one of the actors to start the entire thing. And it opens and I'm supposed to be in the newspaper and I'm supposed to have my first line. And I remember standing there for a good 15 seconds going, I don't know my line. And I put the newspaper up like I'm reading it. And I'm just like, okay, what is my line? I'm like, I wish I wrote it down. Oh my God. And then it just came. But once it started, I just kept going. I just kept going. I didn't allow it to defeat me because like, it was just like that nerve. But like a lot of, I read a lot of psychology books too. So what I've developed is this perspective on being nervous and being excited, they're kind of the same feeling. So it's just like when you're nervous, you can change that into excitement because that's how just how your body's reacting, but your mind's telling you that you're nervous and then you find reasons to be nervous. Whereas if you shift it to I'm excited, you find reasons to be excited. And then once that excitement starts going, you ride that energy and then your performance just grows and grows. And that's like, the crowd is like, you know, in it, like they're laughing, they're cheering, they're everything. It just gives you this adrenaline pump. And that's what I love about theater. But like, hats off to anyone who does theater like for a living, especially musical theater. My God.
Have you read the book Atlas of the Heart by any chance?
I've never read that book, no.
Because Mary Schieffel was on here last week and she was strongly recommending it as a book. So if you're looking for a good book to read, Atlas of the Heart, it's not my recommendation. It's totally from Mary. So there's one to consider for you. I was going to ask you as well, how do you prepare for a play in terms of learning all the lines? And then you immediately preempted that by telling me you forgot your very first line on that play. Wait a second.
Here's the thing. This is one of the things I would say that I very much dislike about my job is memorizing. I very much despise memorizing. I feel like it's just such a tedious task, memorizing lines. So I've tried different methods. My old method, especially when it comes to play, because it's a lot of like word vomiting happening, I would just read it till exhaustion, until I'm just like, I want to throw up. I wouldn't just read my lines, I would read everyone else's lines because I'm like, I want to know everything that's happening. So it was a longer process. Whereas film, because you know, everything's broken up, like one day you'll shoot this scene, another day you shoot that scene. So it's a little bit easier for film. But I read this, and now we're talking about books. I read this book called, I think it was like Quick Brain or something by Jim Quick. And it was, he's like the top leader in like memorizing. He can memorize anything in like 5 seconds. So he wrote a book on that. And so I took a lot of different little methods from that. But the biggest thing I learned from that book was that if you, information paired with an emotional reaction turns into long-term memory. So it's just like you have to tie yourself and marry yourself to the words on the page where you have an emotional reaction and you're more likely to remember it. And good writing kind of just like flows naturally and easy, and it's easier to memorize. For sci-fi, it's a different story because these are like very unconventional words. And if he sees this, it'll be like, he'll agree because he says it all the time. Doug Jones, who plays Saru on The Bridge, he's like the Kelpian and he has to say a lot of like big words. And I remember like him backstage going, I can't, Orville, please say these lines for me because like these words are too much for me, man. And I'm just like, yeah. And he would like challenge me, just like, and he's trying to say his lines. And he's just like, say these lines for the first time, go. And I'm just like, and I'm tripping over them. So I'm like, dang, this is hard. But it's a great challenge, sci-fi. But it's just like, these words are just like, it's not like your typical everyday procedural. Because like doing like shows like Grey's Anatomy and like, any kind of Law and Order stuff, they have unconventional words too. But this is like science that you don't know. That's like some of these words you're just like, is this made up? Like it feels like I'm speaking Klingon at this point. Like it's crazy.
Adorable. Some of your acting, I've seen, I was checking out, you've been in Air Crash Investigations, which of course terrifies me because I don't like flying. The Murdoch, oh, thank God, you're on this, we're on the same page then as that. Murdoch Mysteries, Web of Lies, Bite of a Mango, which I don't think you necessarily want us to talk about. Was I picking up that, that you, is that a new movie that's coming out or is that already
out? That movie came out 2 years ago, so great. That's fine.
Perfect. How do you, like, this is the Adam Driver question we ask everybody, Orville, which is, how do you find watching your own performances back on TV or movies? Do you find it hard or can you do it easily?
Well, in the past, it was very hard for me to watch myself because I was always very critical and I wasn't sure if I was doing it right because art is so subjective, right? So I'm just like, I'm trying to like please everyone with my art, but like, that's just not a thing. It's just like you as a person, you're not going to be for everybody. So I've kind of like worked through that and past that now where I've almost developed this kind of like narcissistic viewpoint where I'm just like, am I coming on it? Am I coming on? I love watching myself because I'm just like, this is why I'm doing this, not just to watch myself, but to like, you know, express and live. And I'm just like, I love watching myself now. And especially that I'm a much better performer now than I was in the past. So now that I know that I know what I'm doing, but I know that there's so much growth there. And I love seeing that progression of growth on screen. It just brings a tear to my eye.
And how have you felt kind of when you've gotten feedback on your performances in terms of improving? Do you kind of take it on board, kind of saying, do you know what? I totally appreciate that. I can kind of use that and kind of better myself. Or do you go, no, how dare you? My performance is perfect. You're absolutely crazy for making such a suggestion.
Yeah. No performance is perfect. There's always room for improvement and an adjustment that could be made, whether it be to be better or just to be different and to be more interesting. So one of the things I'm very grateful for is the pandemic. I know that's not a statement that a lot of people could say, but it really allowed me to change, sit back again. Because of the pandemic, I was more in the solitude state. So I'm just like, that's where I find most of my discovery. So I'm like, perfect. I can't go outside. That's okay. I like being inside anyways and being by myself. So I really look, and because in-person auditions were like a thing of the past, we do a lot of like self-tapes. And I would have a lot of friends that helped me on self-tapes, so they would give me feedback. So it made me more receptive to feedback. And I don't take it as an offense. Even if I disagree, I still try out the feedback just to see how it, like, how I can adjust to it. Because one of the things, one of the main skills an actor needs to develop is taking direction. Because your relationship with the director is so important. And being like a clay is very important and being malleable. So I'm very receptive to like feedback on my performance. And I welcome it. I don't like fiend for it. I don't go and be like, was that good? I don't like do that. But if it's given to me, I'll take it and I'll make the adjustment.
What do you think has been the biggest change you've made to your acting approach over the last couple of years?
Slowing down. I feel like I have a lot of energy and I was just always like, someone told me, Orville, you need to slow down. Because if you're in a casting room and you just, it's supposed to be a 2 minute scene, you finish it in 40 seconds and you just leave before they can even catch you, like, oh, bro, and then you're gone. So you just like slow down and have the experience. And slowing down kind of like evolved into like different things for me. It's not just like slowing down my speech or anything. It's more like living in the moment as it happens. So that allows me to be more connected to the character and what's happening. And it allows me to have a more of a natural reaction. So I think just like being grounded is like a big thing for me in terms of like my art.
So when you were looking at your career before you came on Star Trek, were you looking at it from a kind of point of view of I'd like to be in movies, or did you say I'd like to be in TV, or do you kind of say, do you know what, it doesn't matter. It's an acting job. It's something that's going to challenge me. And that's what I'm actually looking for.
I'm still kind of like figuring that out. I've spoken to different people who have done both, and the advice that I kind of get was just like, when you're young, do TV because it takes up most of your time. When you're old, do movies because it's just like 3 months on and you're off, do promos or whatever, but a TV show will have you for like 6 to 8 months in maybe a different country or something. So do that when you don't have a family, you're not away from people. So I'm just like, that's great advice. And I want to do a little bit of both. Ideally I would be on a show and do a movie, which I've been doing. I've been on Star Trek, and then I shot this movie that's coming out at the end of this year, Morningside. So I personally like, I prefer to watch movies because I like a beginning, middle, and end in one sit down. I these seasons are waiting for next year. I'm just like, I'm gonna forget everything. Like, what's, I have to rewatch the season. That's like an 8-hour movie. That's crazy. But like, I love the progression of being on a television show where you can really sit with the character and develop it. So as an artist, I prefer the TV show. But like, as like. Like having a bigger, like different experiences, I would prefer a movie because like you're not just the same character for like 5 seasons. Yeah. Your character changes and grows, but you're still that character. So I like a bit of both. I just like the way I'm trying to have my career doing is just like 6 months shooting a show and then do 1 or 2 movies a year and just keep that going until I decide, okay, I'm over the shows now. Let's just do into movies. And that'll be a natural progression. So movies is the ultimate goal to get to.
And I was going to ask you what are some of your favorite movies, but you'd probably just make me feel old again by saying there's this really classic movie that I am aware of.
Men in Black. No,
yes.
But like, what are some of the most recent movies you've watched that you really enjoyed?
Oh, man.
We asked really hard questions here, Orville. We're not expecting us to ask that one there.
Yeah, it's because every time I answer this question or someone asks me, like a few days later, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I forgot I watched that film too. I loved Dune. Was a great movie.
Dune was
I really liked Dune. I was just like, wow, this is like a movie, because like lately movies have just been like, you know, just wrapped in pretty plastic, but like this movie is just like, I'm like, yo, this is a film. Like, you guys don't understand, like this is the movie like people buy posters and hang up in their house, because this is like, you know, it'll stand the test of time. You watch it 10 years later from now, it'll still hold up. So I love Dune. I love Mia Goth was in this, it's in this trilogy, Pearl, and that's what the second movie is, but they're coming up with the third one, Maxine. I love horror movies and thrillers, so like watching that, if you guys haven't watched it, watch Pearl. It's such a good movie. It's based in the 1920s. Mia Goth is a horror thriller, and it's so well done.
I think I remember that. Like, it's something that's kind of jumped off the, God Lord. Yes, I know it. I remember the film poster. I know which one you're talking about, all right?
Yeah. And I love the Jordan Peele films. So the Jordan Peele, I'm a huge fan of.
Oh, his latest one was Nope, wasn't it? That was the last one he did.
Yes, that was the last one he did. He is affiliated with Monkey Man, but it's not his movie. But yes, Nope was the last one he did. Yeah, with the aliens. And it was really good. I love it.
And Orville, growing up, were you a fan of Star Trek?
Oh, yeah, I was. I was a fan of... Okay, so when growing up in Jamaica, we get a lot of like American television, and we had the Sci-Fi Network. Yes. So I always thought it was all the same thing, because it would be Star Trek and then Stargate, Atlantis that comes on, and then another sci-fi. And I thought it was all one thing. So it wasn't until older that I created separation in my mind. Oh, and because there were so many different like Star Trek shows, again, I couldn't separate it in my mind which one was which. Because when I was younger, I thought The Little Mermaid was a TV show because the commercials broke it up. I'm like, the episode ended. So God bless my soul as a kid. But as I got older, I realized they were different. So I was a fan of Star Trek. My poor little mind didn't really grasp the bigger concept of what the show was, but I always loved like how cool it was and how fun it was and how adventurous it was, and I'm just like, I want to do something like that. Like, as I got older and realized I could become an actor, I'm like, oh, that's so sick. So
I'm gonna ask you an awkward question now, which like of all the ones that blended into one, which was the one that you liked the most?
I'm going to sound really biased, but it's not a bias. Star Trek season 1 blew me away. I was just like, yo, this is crazy. I remember because when I got the audition, I'm just like, wait. I'm like, oh, yeah, they revamped Star Trek. They remastered it. They brought it back. And I'm just like, I'm going to watch season 1 before I do this audition. And I remember watching it, and I've seen Sonequa and Michelle Yao. And I'm just like, yo, wait, hold on. Star Trek is different now. It was like action-packed. And I'm like, yo, this fight scene's going ham. This is crazy. So I love that. Because like as I matured, I love the like the exciting stuff, you know. And the whole Star Trek was exciting too, but it was more like grounded in his like action or whatever, you know. Because back then Spock was just pinching people's nerves, and now it's just and I'm like, yo, this is so sick. So Star Trek season one, Discovery season one, I was just like, this is insane. This is crazy.
So how did the audition come about then?
The audition come about, again, I'm going to go back to COVID times and how much it changed everything for me, because at the time I was looking to like make a leap in my career, like an advancement. So I decided I wanted to get new headshots, revamp my demo reel, and switch agencies. And that's always a scary thing for actors, to switch agencies, especially when you don't already have an agent lined up that wants to accept you. So I left my old agency and I was without an agent for a while. And I'm just like, all right, I'm gonna do the thing again, start applying to these agencies. The response rate is like, from my experience in the past, was very low. Like, you know, you send out like to 10 agents and agencies and like none of them would respond to you, maybe one or whatever. And if they respond to you, be like, oh my God, are they going to accept me? And they're like, we're not looking for any. So I'm just like, okay, here we go again to do this. But again, I revamped my headshots and my demo reel and everything. And I'm like, let's just take this leap of faith. And I'm like, it wasn't at a time in COVID where I'm like, nothing's really filming. So I'm like, this is so weird. But at the same time, I'm like, if they don't accept me, it's because of COVID. It's not because of my talent or whatever. So I'm just like, I'll just try again in six months.
It's fine.
I'll just try again in six. Exactly. So I did it. And to my surprise, I submitted to probably like seven agencies, like my top seven. I would say six of them got back to me. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And I met with a lot of them. And my top agent, I won't name the names, but like my top agent, the agency that I wanted the most since I graduated Toronto Film School, they had a meeting with me. I submitted to them like yearly. And I was like, wow, they want to meet with me? That's crazy. The meeting went well and they were excited about me. But a week before that, I had a meeting with this on this other agency. And there was just something about them that really like registered with me. When I spoke to the agent on the phone, it's like she completed my sentences. She didn't cut me off. She completed my sentences. I'm like, we're on the exact same energetic wave. And I'm just like, the next agent I'm with, I'm choosing it like it's a relationship. Someone who understands me, because that's really big for me. She understood me and she saw something in me. And I'm like, I'm signing with you. Signing with her, I booked, what's it called? It was called Lady Detective. It was a longer form for it that's now Pretty Hard Cases, that gave me my full union status to become a union actor so I can go out for bigger roles. And then within a month after that, I had the audition for Star Trek, but it wasn't titled Star Trek because they're super secretive about everything. But I'm smart. I figured it out. But it's like, yeah, let me sign this NDA, blah, 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 blah. I know, guys. I can do this, can read between the lines. I know how to do my research.
Wait a second. What was the code name it was given then if it wasn't clearly Star Trek?
I think at the time it was Tennessee Honey. And I was just like, this is wild. I'm like, is this a Southern show? Or I'm just like, what is this? But
swear, that's Jack
Daniels. My research. Yeah. I was just like, what is going on here? But during my research, I'm just like, oh. And then I watched season one and I was like, oh, interesting. So the original audition, I was auditioning for the role called I always mess up the name. It was an alien called Gorv. It's a warthog, and he's in season four. So I did that audition, and then a week later, the casting director got back to my agent. The agent related to me, said that, hey, they're still being considered for this role. They really like your tape and everything, but they want you to read for this character instead, just to see where they could place you. I'm like, all right, cool. And I'm like, okay, this character doesn't have prosthetics or whatever. So I'm like, okay, I won't be an alien, so I won't be as cool. I'll be human. I'll just be Orville. But reading the role, I'm like, oh, this is pretty interesting. This is pretty interesting. So I read for that role. And then a week went by, and then they contacted my agent, called me and be like, hey, they want you for this role of Lieutenant Christopher. Are you going to accept it? I'm like, of course. Yeah, let's do it. So that role was only supposed to be for like three episodes. I was like, yo, listen, at the time I was like, yo, just give me one. Put me on that bridge, because I'm like, this is freaking cool.
I want a uniform and I want to be on the bridge. And then I'm happy.
Yo, I'm telling you, the first day I went in for the fitting, yo, I think my cheeks were hurting so much because I was smiling, because I'm just like, yo, this is crazy. And then, so I stepping on the bridge for the first time, it was like the most surreal moment in my entire life, because as a kid, I would always like, you know, play with like boxes or whatever and pretend they were spaceships. And then here I'm just like, whoa, I feel like a big kid. This spaceship real. I'm like, I thought this was all CGI. I'm pressing buttons. There's like these like iPads that installed in the dash of the monitor. And I'm like, oh, that actually does something. Should I be touching this? This is crazy. But then that role kind of evolved. So I did those three episodes, and then Merry Christmas to me, I guess. It's around Christmas, my agent messaged me and said, hey, they want you back for 5 more episodes. I'm like, what? Of course, let's do it. And then it kind of just grew from there. And the next season, you're just like, you're just going to be a regular on the show. And I'm like, this is awesome. So that kind of like changed everything for me. And it's been the most amazing journey that I've been on so far. And it's great.
I have to ask, how comfortable is the uniform?
So under the uniform, you're wearing this like onesie, like tights and a Speedo. That's the most uncomfortable thing, because they can't have any underwear showing or whatever. So they put like in this like tiny little like thong kind of thing. So that is the most uncomfortable time, because I'm just like constantly adjusting and action. So
what you're saying is, Orville, like if we go back and watch season 4 and continue watching season 5, there'd be some point in one episode where if you look closely in the back of the bridge,
if you look closely, you might see me.
Lieutenant Christopher just readjusting himself. Yeah,
there might see me adjusting it, but the uniform itself, like the overcoat, it's not uncomfortable, and it gives you a sense. It kind of like straightens your posture, because it's like so form fitting. Like I'm just like, yeah, put this on, and it's like, oh. Okay, it's like it transformed you into the characters. So it really gave a sense of like, this is real, this is happening right now. So it was comfortable in that sense. It's just the Speedo.
Please tell me you have a picture of you in the captain's chair on the bridge.
I do. I do have a picture of myself in the captain. There was no way I was gonna leave that set without ever getting a photo in the captain's chair. There's no way I was going to let that opportunity.
Because that would be the first thing if I ever got the opportunity, that'd be the first thing, beeline straight for the captain's chair.
Yeah. I actually, the first day on set, when, you know, everyone was setting up and we did our line reads and everything, our rehearsal, I was just walking around just exploring. And I remember going to the captain's chair. It was a very dramatic moment. I'm just like touching it. I'm rubbing it. And I'm just like, dude, this is nice. And I remember accidentally pressing a button, and then the thing opened up on the handle, and it went, and I'm like, and I'm looking around at the props department, hoping that no one saw me. And I remember looking in it. This is such an amazing moment. I look in it, and there's a photograph in there. And the photograph was like off a season 1 of the bridge crew just in there. And I'm just like, what is this doing in here? I'm like, this is so cool. But then I panicked after, because I didn't know how to close it. I'm just like this. But everyone on that set is so nice and everything. The prop lady comes up to me, she smiles, she goes, and it just goes, I'm like, oh, all right, thank you.
You're now on props naughty list, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I've been on their naughty list. They're always watching me, say, what is he doing over there? Because even I'm always, because I'm so lost just being on the bridge, even when the camera's not rolling, I'm like touching stuff, pretending I'm like doing stuff. There's a time where there was a scene where the camera was supposed to be on a rig, and it's supposed to like go past the bridge crew into this other room. And then you're going to have the conversation in there. So it's calls action. I'm doing my stuff, you know, making calls, you know, because I work the call center late night shift. And they pass me, and I'm doing the thing. And everyone, and one of the actresses come up to me, like, Orville, the camera doesn't see you. I'm like, I know. And I'm just still doing my thing. I was like, while I'm waiting,
it makes me feel better. It's fine.
It makes me feel better. I'm always engaged.
Orville, I have to ask you, on your Instagram page, because as Mike correctly accused me earlier on of stalking and things like that, you have these really cool photos of you. I'm looking at them right here. There's a really cool photo of you on the transporter pad, and you kind of have your face kind of covered like that. You have another one of you in the corridor. You can't see your face. Were they promotional images, or are you just saying, I'm going to do these myself because they look really cool?
I did it myself because it looked really cool. I remember when I saw that, there was setting up for the thing. They had no BTS photographer for this particular day. So I was like, dang, why didn't they bring the BTS photographer? This looks so cool. Everyone was coming out of that little hallway, had a cool silhouette. And I'm just like, I want that. So I turned to one of my co-stars, Zara, and I'm just like, hey, can you take a photo of me? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go here. It's going to be a silhouette. It's going to be cool. Just keep pressing the button. I'll do different poses. And yeah, that's how that photo came about. I personally love this, like, photography is also like a passion of mine. As I said, I've grown into like a bit of a narcissist in that sense, where I'm just like, oh man, I love taking photos of me. Hold this camera for a second, and I'll just do a post somewhere. So that's how that came about. There are like promotional photos that I have. I use that mainly for like PR stuff and whatever, and then the photos I take just go on my Instagram.
So probably the photo I actually love the most is the picture of the whole bridge crew where the camera's kind of facing up and
Upwards.
you're all looking down and you're
Oh
doing the
yes.
Vulcan salute,
Oh
that
man.
photo there.
Oh man. Oh man,
Who
that's my favorite photo.
took that photo?
I took that photo. I took that photo, and it was just like, it was something, because a couple of years back when I was like, I picked up photography as like a little hobby, I liked recreating album covers. So I would just do old album covers, and that is actually inspiration from an album cover from, I don't know if you know this rap group in the 90s, called NWA. So if you go to the end, if you type in NWA, I'm sorry guys, I had to do it. It's a classic album cover. I said it again, it's a classic, okay? It's a classic. So if you Google NWA album cover, that's one of their most iconic album cover, and I want to recreate it for Star Trek. So that's what I did.
Mike, I don't think I've ever been made to feel as old as Orville has made me in this interview. So
Well, hang on. If I remember rightly, NWA was Dre, Ice Cube,
Eazy-E
Yella, Eazy-E,
and Ren.
and Ren. That's it. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Mike,
And we were all those people.
you're blatantly reading that off the internet right now as
Nope.
we're talking. You
Nope. Oh
absolutely
no,
are.
the man knows. The man
Nope.
knows. He was down in
It's okay. I'm a
NWA. He was
massive
down.
music nerd. So,
Yeah, he
and
was
also to
down.
be fair, my brother, when, well, he was what, 10, 11, was massively into hip hop and rap. So there was lots of that. And yeah, not my cup of tea. It's not something I actively listen to, but there's a
Yeah,
few.
no, I feel you. I
And
feel you.
or like one of the things, we were speaking to David Tomlinson 2 weeks ago, and he mentioned you specifically, and he was kind of saying about like hanging around on the bridge and how lovely a person you are. What's the atmosphere like on the bridge, like in between takes and things like that? Because as you were saying, like it's a very long day and it's important for people to kind of stay enthusiastic, energetic. Like, who are some of the kind of ringleaders to kind of keep everybody motivated?
I will say, yeah, it's very important because, yeah, when we hit that 9 hour mark, especially after lunch and we have a big lunch, everyone's feeling lethargic and everyone's feeling it. And I would say, like, the person that helps the most, and God bless her soul, is Sonequa. Sonequa can feel when the energy in the room has shifted, and she knows how to like pick it back up. And everything, she never fails. And she has these things that she would do in between takes when she feels that the energy is going down. We'll do like these 15 claps, and she's like, "Everybody, clap your hands!" Or someone will turn on music, and we'll just start dancing just to get everyone engaged and happy and having a good time. So Sonequa is really a good leader in that sense. She's what truly being a lead on a TV show represents. It's like leading and controlling and influencing the energy on set. And she's a mom too. Like, I don't know how she has so much energy. Like, in between takes, she's FaceTiming her husband and her kids, and then coming here and doing all the great, wonderful things she does. But aside from her, all the bridge crew, well, we've all grown as family. I'm so grateful that they've welcomed me as a family, because they've been on the show for like years and they've grown with each other. And I'm the newcomer here, and I'm just like a season from, "Hey guys, I'm the new guy. Like, come on over." And it was, oh, this is so nice. So everyone was very welcoming, and I had like a different kind of relationship with everyone in a sense. Like when I'm alone with Ilsen, Sarah Mitic, like we'll talk about like what we've read, spiritualities, the quote of the day that we have with each other, because that's how we connected. And then I'll go over and talk to like Lieutenant Reese, or General Reese, aka Patrick. And Patrick's so wise, and he's like a mentor for me. He gets uncomfortable when I said, "Yo, you're my mentor, man." He's like, "Yeah," because he's like, "You're making me feel old, you know what I mean?" I'm like, "Oh, you know so much, man, and you give me
Oh, I
such good
know how
advice."
he feel. I know how he feels in that situation. All right.
Yeah, so he's like, I look to him as like a big brother on set, and he's like such a cool, like chill dude. And then I'll just goof off with Mary sometimes, and Oyen and Emily, and then but David and I grew to have a very special relationship, because he became like kind of like my my we call it the look buddy. It's like someone, you have someone to like bounce emotions off of, and he's right there looking all the way across the bridge, and like, it doesn't work, David's right here. And we've developed this like very loving relationship, where we kind of just like, we kind of develop our own side story of like what our characters do, never on screen. But I'm just like, if you guys want to write the same, like it'll work. We got to a point where we're just like, yo, we even thought of our own spin-off show. And it's called, I named it, he didn't name it, but I named it. I called it Black Dragon. There's like, I'm the black, you're the dragon. All right, let's do this. And between takes before we go action, we have like our little thing we do before we go on, our Black Dragon signature like handshake or like greeting. And it's just like Black Dragon. And then we get to it. And it's just like something we always do to keep ourselves engaged and everything.
So you do know now that every single time a fan that's seen this is going to come up to you now and go, Black Dragon, rah!
Dragon! We thought about how our adventures would be, and it's like a comedy spinoff between me and him, because we always like have indifference about like how we want to go about a mission. We have these bikes called the Lizards. It's like, let's go release the Lizards, and we're riding the Lizards through the desert. Like, we just have so much fun like curating our own story off camera of like how, if we ever got a spinoff, it's just like, I'm the communications officer and he's like the alien. I'm just like, you be the face, I'll do the talking, all right, because you only speak your language. I can speak to any other alien because I'm the comms officer here.
How did you find the dialogue then? Because we were talking about like techno babble and anything intricate and things like that. How have you found all that? Or are you still there going, I have absolutely no idea what words I said. They seem to make sense to somebody. Yeah. They don't make sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a sci-fi nerd. So when I see words like that, I get excited because I'm like, oh, what does it mean? Oh, what does it mean in this moment though? So I kind of just like really look into it. Because I've done a lot of research about what the show is talking about. And one of the things that fascinate me the most is Stamets' little importance in the show as being like the main, you know, sport drive operator. And I'm just like, and I did some research. I'm just like, whoa, he's actually based off of a real life person, Stamets. And he's just like, who's the leading researcher in mushrooms. And I'm like, oh, the mycelial network is a real thing. And I did that research. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. Because I'm like, Star Trek has been like the leading like advancement in technology. Like they first had the sliding doors and everything, and people are just like, oh, that makes so much sense. It's just have automatic doors. So I'm just like, wow, I hope people really pay attention to that and see like the benefits of mushroom, not just in a psychedelical sense, but in the sense of like health. And I started taking mushrooms myself because I did that research, like taking turkey tail mushroom, lion's mane for memory and everything, just for like health purposes. And I'm just like, yo, it's such a fascinated like thing. So I when I see jargons like that, I always try to do a deep dive of like, what does this mean? Why are we talking about it? Oh, this is so cool. Yeah, just, so that's what it is for me.
And just in terms of, say, what have you felt your, say, the connection with the Star Trek fans has been like so far in your time on Discovery?
It's been really cool. I mean, like, listen, I don't know, like, I have a self-tape business that I was running through also with COVID, so actors can come to me and I can take their self-tape auditions. So ever since being on the show, I guess the fans clicked my link in my bio at the time. It's not there anymore because then they would just find out where I live, and I'll come home, there's a big package, and I'm just like, what is this for? Because I live with my brother. I'm just like, he orders stuff on Amazon all the time, so I'm just like, it's probably his. And I'm just like, Orville from Germany. And I would open it, and it's so wild, like opening it and pulling out a paper, and it's a picture of me, and I'm like, oh, who's here? And it'll just be, but that was like my first reaction. But then there would always be a note, and the notes have been like very heartwarming and very like nice. I'm like, wow, I didn't think I was having this much of an impact on people. One fan in particular saying that, oh, you really inspired me and made me, and I connected with your character because you're new to the show, into this like position, and I'm moving into that kind of similar position in real life in going into the Air Force and everything, and you kind of like I kind of register with that and everything. I'm like, wow, man, that's amazing. And I'll write them back and everything. And I've done a couple card signings here and there. Like card signing was like one of the coolest things that I've done. I'm like, wow, I've never seen my face on like a card collection thing before. I never thought I would. And I'm like, this is so cool. And I signed the first card. I'm like, ha, that's cool. And then I looked down, I'm just like, there's 1,500 more. Like it took me, there's 1,500 cards to sign. And it's not just my signature. I have to do like a quote because it's like a line for me to put my, like, this is like, I have to make my own Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And I'm like, so it took like hours to do that, but like I enjoyed it because like I know I'm giving something, and it's not just like, you know, like it has value to someone out there, because the fans of the show, they're so hardcore and they're so invested. So I'm just like, yeah, this is worth my time for sure.
Have you been kind of surprised by that, Orville?
Yeah, I mean, like, it was such a shift for me, because I'm just like, you know, as like an actor, you know, you're expected to develop some form of fan base, but being on a particular show that has such already huge fan base, and then they see you, I'm like, oh, and they come, and then they come for you, but they like recognize you, and they like, people message me on Instagram and everything, and I'm doing my first convention next month in Long Island, New York, so that's going to be a very interesting like experience for me, and I'm grateful for the ride. It's a great ride and everything, so it's been fun, really.
And just in terms of, without spoiling anything, in terms of, say, you know, you were on the show season 4, in season 5 and things like that, what was it like on your last day on set?
Last day on set, oh man, there were so many emotions. So many emotions, because, you know, everyone grew as a family, and, you know, it's hard to like, it's not that the family got dissolved. Everyone is very much still close off set of Star Trek, but it was still very hard because a lot of people grew up on that set. And I was grateful to like share that experience there, being so new. I've only been on for like 2 seasons, but like those 2 seasons felt like a lifetime to me. And when we first did our last day on set, which we didn't know would be our last day on set, until we got information from the showrunners and everything that we're not going to continue the show anymore, and then, but we're going to come back to give the show a proper ending. And that last day, oh man, the emotions were hitting everybody, especially like the scene itself that we created was already such a like an emotional, heartfelt scene. And then what it represents for us as like the family, like it was just like getting hit by emotions from both sides. And it was just like, it was beautiful. It wasn't sad. And like, it wasn't a sad thing. It was just like the most like pure, joyful, like goodbye that we could say to the show. And I'm glad that the showrunners allowed us to have that instead of just like, so I was grateful for that. So it was like very emotional and very, very happy. It was a very good goodbye.
What's the biggest thing you're going to miss from being on the show?
Oh man, the biggest thing I'm going to miss from the show.
See, we asked the hard questions, Orville. We warned you at the start. Dude, it's the hard questions.
Yeah, it's the explosions. I'm not going to lie to you. The explosions blew me away. Like, not just like no, like pun intended. Like it was crazy. Yeah. Like my first day on set. You're like, oh, we're doing a pyrotechnic meeting. I'm just like, oh. This is what we're doing. And then I'm just like, okay, it's going to be a little boom, 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 and you'll CGI everything else. And then they're doing the whole demonstration of what's going to be happening. So I was like, okay, so we're going to have some little, like little fire, like things falling from, like embers. I'm like, okay, cool. Then we're going to have fire coming out of this vent, that vent. I'm like, oh, what kind of fire? Whoa! And then it's like, okay, then we're going to have an explosion going off here. Boom! Oh, I'm like, this is crazy. And then the makeup artist comes like, do you need earplugs? And I'm just like, and I put them in. And the reason why I'm going to miss that the most is because those are the moments, is like everything on that bridge is like do or die. But like those moments, it's like you forget that you're completely on a show. Like it feels like you're literally on a spaceship about to crash. And I'm just like, wow, me as a child pretending I'm on a spaceship from a crash, it's like magnified 100-fold being here with an actual flamethrower going right next to me. So most of the reactions shots they get from me is real. There was one time where Sarah Nilsson was like, she looked over and she's like, are you okay? She's like, what? I'm like, what happened? She's just like, I looked over at you and there was a steam and smoke coming off of you. And I was like, oh, oh, the flame was that close. I mean, like they take a lot of like caution for like safety. Everyone is safe on that set, but like your adrenaline's still pumping because the explosions, like they don't tell you when it's going off. You do the rehearsal, but like the explosions are cued behind the scenes. So when it happens, you get like a real jerk reaction. They kind of like set your brain into like overdrive and you're really like in it. So like those intense moments, I'm gonna miss those. I'm gonna miss those for real.
And if you were to pick, say, one moment outside of the explosions that you'd take with you in terms of your memories of being on Discovery, what would it be?
Oh man, I think the moments that I love the most is like the morning where everyone just comes in. Cause like, you know, I'm grateful to have a job where I love, cause a lot of people, they go into a job and they don't like their job or they don't like the people they work with, where it's the complete opposite here. Like, I love my job. But when I come in, the people are so welcoming. Everyone's in like, kind of like their pajamas. We get like these robes before we get into a costume. Everyone's like, oh, hello in the morning. And it's just like, it's love. Like, even if you're dead tired from the day before of all these explosions, you come in and the loving energy that everyone brings, the director, the writers, the crew people, everyone's just like, it's like a community. It's like a paradise community. And it's like, I'm going to really miss that. Like, it's, I like, every set has their own individual community, but the Star Trek set, I haven't experienced anything like that. And it was like the most beautiful thing. And I'm going to miss that truly and deeply.
And if I suspect I know the answer to this question already, if you had a chance to come back, would you? If even if it wasn't as Lieutenant Christopher, was even as another character, would you like to come back?
In a heartbeat, I would come back. And there's so much potential for that. Because like, put me in prosthetics, but like, there's so much potential for that. I would come back not just to work, but to like have that experience again, being maybe on a different ship, maybe on a different planet, because it's so fun, man. Like the 10C planet that they created was like one of the most surreal moments for me, because it was done. It was the first time I shot anything on an AR wall, which is the most advanced version of a green screen. For people who are watching, who don't know, and I remember the AR wall flicked on. And it's supposed to be like we're on a floating rock. And if you being on it for a long time, you're just like, yo, I actually feel like people got motion sickness because it literally felt like you were moving. And I'm like, yo, this is so cool. Like, I'm in a completely different world now. And I'm just like, I love that. So Star Trek really brings that magic to life. And I'm like, I'll come back in a heartbeat if they ask me for the new show that they're developing.
And of course, obviously, you and David's spin-off show, which I'm sure will be
at
some point.
Black Dragon. Yes. Black Dragon, baby. Let's make it happen.
David in the brain. Orville, in terms of your own future, like, would you see yourself eventually just staying as an actor, or would you like to get into writing or directing in the future?
I'm currently doing that right now. I try to like be as versatile as I can within this industry. Being an actor in this industry, it's great, but at the same time, it can feel like you're at the mercy of whatever is happening in the industry, being like the strike or whatever politics is in play in terms of casting or whatever. So you kind of feel like you're at that mercy, and I don't like to feel that. I want to be free in my expression, in my art. So when I'm not acting, you know, when I'm off, I take the time and I write my own things. I've recently trying to get into directed. I recently made my first directorial debut last year when I directed and wrote a horror short that I did called Greenlight. And it's in post-production right now. So I can't wait for that to be done. And that'll like kick off my resume as a writer and a director. And I'm also writing a comedy, single cam comedy show right now called Me, My Ex, and I. And writing a sci-fi anthology, which that's been the biggest challenge. Writing a sci-fi anthology, my brain, it's a huge feat, but it's like, I enjoy telling stories and I enjoy directing, because that was like a secondary passion for me. When I started school, I was like, I want to be a director or actor. But then the school was just like, you got to pick one. So I chose acting, but the love for directing never went away. And I'm glad that I chose acting, because now being in front of the camera, it allows me to understand what goes on in the mind of an actor. So when I go behind camera as a director, I know how to communicate and direct an actor, where it's not so giving them a line read or just telling them, I'm doing like this. I can know what trigger words to say to an actor, and they can understand, oh, and then they just do it. So
yeah, let's face it, some of the best directors are actors.
Oh yeah, 100%. 100%. Yes, they are. 100%. Shout out to Denzel Washington.
And Jonathan Frakes.
Amazing movie. And Jonathan Frakes. Oh my God. Yo, shout out to John. Oh, I'm going to tell you guys, be on the lookout for this. I have a photo with Jonathan Frakes that I'm going to like post at some point. I was just waiting for the season to be over. And it's one of my favorite photos I've taken on that set. I'll give you a description of the image. So when Jonathan Frakes came on, because he directs all the Star Trek, he comes on to an episode, he does a lot of Strange New Worlds, he comes on Discovery interchangeably, and he directed one of the episodes. I'm like, yo, this is Jonathan Frakes. It's crazy. And at the end, when he's done his, when he was finished with the day, and everyone's just like, yo, we got a photo with Jonathan Frakes, and what's proud of you? And I'm just like, I'm gonna get a photo with Jonathan Frakes. But I'm like, I'm gonna let everyone get their photos first. I'll take their photos and whatever. And I'm just like, all right, my turn. And I pass it to one of the actors. I'm like, I take a photo with Jonathan Frakes. Now everyone's just like, you know, hugging him and everything. And I'm just like, I want him to hold me. So I'm just like, I want him to pick me up and cradle me. I did not know. Someone told my hairdresser told me after this that Jonathan Frakes is notoriously known for just, you know, having like a bad back.
Bad back problem. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that. And I'm 175 pounds. I didn't know that. So I'm like, Jonathan, okay, you ready? And he's like, okay. And I jump into his arms and he grabs me and he goes, oh, and he bends over immediately. And he's caught, every frame of that is caught on camera. So I forgot who took the photo, but shout out to them because they caught every single frame. And I remember when I show people that photo, I always die of laughter because his face is just pure pain and my face is just pure joy. It's so funny. And soon at some point, I'll post that photo.
So when I see him later this year, then I need to remind him of this wonderful moment he had with Orville Cummings where he broke his back.
Yes, yes. I did not know. If I knew it ahead of time, maybe I wouldn't have done that. But I'm just like, he's 6 foot. He can lift me up. It's fine. He's strong. Full dead weight on him. Crazy.
You see, Mike, it's old people like us who know that Jonathan Frakes is a bad back. Young people yeah. like Orville do not know that he's got a bad back.
I don't know. My bad. I don't know. You know.
Blame the TNG uniforms.
Yes, I'll blame the TNG uniforms. I didn't know he had a bad back. Oops, man. He's fine, though.
Mike, I will let you ask the last question of Orville.
I have a really, really quick question for you.
Go ahead.
Elder Scrolls, Fallout, mm-hmm. Starfield.
That's crazy. Elder Scrolls.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say
Skyrim. Starfield. I love Starfield, but I chose Skyrim because when that game was coming out, I was so excited for it. I bought it before I even owned the Xbox. I bought the game before I even bought the system. That's how excited. It stood in my glass case for like months before it came out because I was waiting till Christmas to get my Xbox. But I'm like, I'm buying the game already. Like, I'm already yep. playing in my head. Yeah. And the first day I opened it and I hooked up my Xbox, I plugged it in. I remember closing my curtains. It was 9 a.m. in the morning. I'm playing and my dad is yelling, Orville, it's time for dinner. I'm like, that's impossible. I opened the windows. And I'm like, it's dark. It was the first game that I can say that someone had to pry me away from it. So it always has a special place in my heart. I love Starfield, though. I've created my own Lieutenant Christopher on it, on my own like bridge crew and everything. But like, Elder Scrolls always has a special place in my heart.
Did you find the Star Trek Star uniforms?
The Star Trek Star uniforms? Okay, you're gonna have to send me all the places where I could find those.
I'll DM you on Instagram.
Yes, please.
Because,
I don't know where.
You know it's the ship that got... Oh. Anyway, I'll DM you. But yes, there are blue, black, and red, very Star Trek style uniforms.
Oh, send it to me. I need a reason to go get back in.
There you go, then. I'll DM you. And then one final question for you. It's super easy, just like all the other questions we've asked you today. Orville Cummings, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Oh, man. What does Star Trek mean to me? There's so many ways I can answer that question. I can answer it from the perspective as an actor being on the Star Trek set, or I can answer it as like a very like psychological way of like what the story represents and what Star Trek represents. So I think I'll do that because I've talked about the on-set experience a lot. And I think Star Trek kind of represents to me like bridging the gap between everything that makes us different and coming together as one for a greater good. And I think the show, time and time again, especially Discovery, really showcased that. Season 4, when we battled the 10th Sea, when everything was being destroyed and we really had to like band together to fight a common enemy, it was beautiful. And this particular season, without giving anything away, it's a very beautiful story that really ends off the show very well, I think, in my perspective. And it'll stand as a testament to what the show is truly about. It's about coming together. It's about family. It's about love. Of all things, it's gonna be about love the most, and it's by far the most the show that I think that brings people together and really it showcases what true unity is, no matter what race, sex, sexuality, or what alien, what planet you're from, that we can, if we all come together, we can make a huge difference, not just in our respected locale, but in the grand scheme of life itself.
That's awesome.
The statement. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, Orville, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yes, thank you for having me.
It's been a right laugh. I've really enjoyed this one.
Yes, thank you guys. No, that was this is great. I'm glad that you guys took the time and I had the time, because I'm leaving soon to LA, so I'm just like, oh, perfect. You guys scheduled me for the day, the second last day I'm here, so I have time in the morning to do this, and I'm glad we did this and we got to talk. It's been a blast.
Awesome. Well, for everyone watching and listening at home, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode, and until next time, live long and prosper.